Thanks for tuning in to Jin and Tantra. In this episode, we continue with a discussion on meditative techniques to deal with a mischievous mind, visualization in this case. We break down the concept of a yidam, tantric meditation, overcoming mundane appearances and conceptions, and what to do when you are getting your ass kicked. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to Jin and Tantra, spirituality with a twist. The podcast that takes Tantrism, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Kabbalism, Shamanism, Chinese medicineism, and all of the other isms we've been influenced by, and blends them into a tall, crisp, cool cocktail. Your spirit has been longing for.
I want you to get together.
Now, isn't that refreshing?
I want you to get together.
Hey, fellow GNTers, those of us like our spirituality with a twist. So we're doing obstacle number five. We're doing the deep dive into obstacle number five, which is dealing with the problems of the mind that inflicts suffering on itself or something. But what it really kind of ended up being, and this is our working towards our project of nine things that could fuck up your life, right? Really talking about how do you handle this, right? Not to just leave it as an observation like, hey, the mind does things to mess up the mind or mess up the person, but go through and actually talk about like, what would you do about that? And it started this exploration. And you were saying last time, you know, this is something you've been waiting to do for a long time to go through and really kind of have this conversation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're fascinated by this idea of like, you know, the different like kind of techniques around this. So we've had a couple episodes. Last one was really about the idea of mantra.
Yeah.
In like more like the way we probably would normally think about mantra, like a series of syllables that you say, right? But you did bring up the idea of like the meaning of mantra is mind protection, right? This notion. And it kind of naturally kind of leads into the next idea, which is talking about aspects of like tantric meditation. For maybe like me and for you, maybe like certainly for me, my home base would be sort of like in Buddhist tantra. So that's kind of one that we're focusing on here. And then specifically this idea of like this thing called the yidam. So do you want to take a tumble at defining that or do you want me to do it?
You brought it up, so.
I'll pass the baton back. All right. So the yidam is one of the more like interesting things. I know when I first heard about it, I was like, okay, how do I think about this? What am I supposed to think of what this thing means, right? Like, what is a yidam? So on the one hand, it's kind of like, they'll sometimes call it like meditating on yourself as a deity too. And this is where you get to some of this Buddhist iconography of the goddess Tara, or Manjushri, or some of the highest yoga tantra figures. They have these ideas of different levels of tantra, right? So some of the ones that are more common maybe aren't like the more secret on the QT highest ones, but then you get to things like Yamantaka or Chakrasambhara or Kali Chakra. And they're like these divine iconographies. And it's interesting to say what they really kind of represent and the way they kind of represent like the enlightened state, right? And they have all kinds of symbolism within them that tries to capture different aspects of what it feels like or what it means or talents and abilities of being enlightened. So they look like they have like all kinds of arms and legs and heads and all this other stuff. But each of those things are supposed to be symbolic of some talent or aspect, some feature of like ultimate enlightened state. So, and again, that's very interesting, right? Just the way that whole thing works, right? I think if we, you know, we did our stuff on Jung and you might say they're archetypal on some level. And I suppose if you were Jungian, you would kind of like make a point that they're archetypes. But I think, you know, the deeper idea is not just to say that they're an archetype, but to say that they're enlightened forms or something, right? They're images of enlightenment that you meditate on. Yeah. And so when you go through, say you got like, okay, I want to go through and I want to like do tantra or do Buddhist tantra. So what would happen was you'd go and you get some kind of empowerment, especially for these things that are a little bit more advanced, the highest yoga ones. And you know, part of the daily meditation is to kind of convert yourself into this divine figure. You meditate on yourself as this divine figure. And the Dalai Lama talks about that. And he basically says, what you're doing every day then is you're practicing your own enlightenment process. So you go through and you do a series of meditations where you kind of reach back and you tap into the deepest part of your being, your clear light mind of bliss, your Buddha nature, your Yuan Shen, if you want to be a little Taoist about it or whatever. And then you emerge out, not as like, say, Eric or Daniel or whoever you are, but you emerge out as Tara or Manjushri or Avalokiteshvara or, you know, Yamantaka, if you're doing highest yoga tantra and you have that initiation, or Chakrasambhara, the wheel of bliss, or Kala Chakra, the wheel of time, or whoever you're into, you know what I mean? And so that's kind of how it works. And I thought that was, it took me a while to kind of figure that part out. When I first got one of these, it was a little bit spontaneous for me. Mm-hmm. I knew something about it, but it came up as an offering, a possibility. There was a student who said the one was going to happen. And I was like, well, okay, if I'm ever going to do this, I might as well do this now. This opportunity just fell in my lap. So I took it, totally not understanding maybe what it would mean as far as a daily practice or what all those kinds of things would be about. And when I got to the Dalai Lama kind of explained, like, what you're really doing is you're rehearsing. That meditation is your rehearsal of your enlightenment, and every day you do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a way of kind of like thinking about what the end state will be, but it's also, as you go along, you get closer and closer in your qualities to the enlightened qualities that are represented by this item, because you're constantly kind of contemplating them and meditating them and transforming them. That's kind of the idea. You got something else you want to say? I mean, there's more to say about that.
Yeah.
But anything in the immediate, Daniel? I kind of did a little bit of it. You want to pick up and throw in there what you think is important too?
Yeah, I mean, so it is those things, but I think it could be, and we're kind of inclusive of other practices as well. It could be any aspect of the enlightenment form that you feel is an enlightened form, right? So if that's Jesus or what, you know, the problem is the problem and the benefit, I don't know, it's a little bit weird, is the personification. You know, and I talked last week about de-anthropomorphizing the deities, you know, or some of the yidams, right? But the on the other hand, you know, in human body form, that is kind of shunned as a general practice, to see yourself as someone else. We could emulate, right? You can be like Mike, right? Remember that advertising?
The old Michael Jordan thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, right. That's probably dating myself a little bit, you know, kid of the 90s, but that's all good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they never say be Mike. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, you ask yourself, like, what would Jesus do? That was a popular thing for a little while. They would put that on little wristbands, WWJD, you know,
necklaces. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't ask the question, what did Jesus do? So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a little bit of a difference. So you're not exactly able to imagine yourself as another person, because then you'll think of personified, right? You'll think of them as a person and not as like an embodiment of the enlightened form. So it makes it a little bit difficult translating that into humans. But essentially, anything that you like, you could emulate that as whatever you're visualizing as an abstract for enlightenment with those abilities, like you were saying, those like special powers, if you will.
Mm. So like, I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to make it like, okay, there's this very specific Buddhist tantric way of doing this, but if we generalize it out, you can take it and be other things too. I can imagine like myself as Saint Francis of Assisi or something like that, right?
Yes.
Or I can imagine myself as whatever.
Yes. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're doing it as a doorway to tap into that enlightened form. And if I can go maybe a little bit even further, you see, it's also rehearsing yourself seeing you as something other than you. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Which loosens your grip on yourself, you know, because mm-hmm. we're so used to seeing ourselves as ourselves that we're very attached to that thing, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But seeing yourself as something else in my opinion, connects you to other things because now you can identify yourself as something else, even if that thing is, you know, shamanic in nature, right? I'm thinking of all the different, you know, visualizations that people have of themselves flying like a eagle or walking like a bear or running like a tiger or a panther or a leopard or whatever. You know, you in those moments, you feel as if you are one of those animals. Like there is no separation between you and them. And I think that, you know, there's many other things that does to change your perspective, but in the immediate sense, again, Capricorn, Eric, if you want to show us your mug on screen, Eric has a Capricorn mug, which is always interesting because, you know, that's, there we are. But it does, I think it helps to loosen the hold of that your mind has on this temporary localized phenomenon, as our beloved Lama Glenn likes to call us and everybody.
I mean, I almost want to like get back to that because I'm thinking about that in a really deep way, but maybe we'll flesh out some of what this is supposed to do in terms of helping you deal with the emotions that are difficult or something, right? Which is part of the theme of the deal, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's really funny or interesting, is, you know, when the Dalai Lama talks, so first of all, the thing that struck me is the Dalai Lama explained like, what is this about? And the idea is that you're rehearsing kind of an enlightenment process, right? But that also can relate to kind of things that you're talking about too. I can let go of aspects of myself and embody the quality of eagle or bear or wolf or something like that, right? Yeah. So, and there's I think that's part of it, right? Mm-hmm. To do this, it's also this rehearsal part. So that struck me really deep. And then the other thing was when he talks about, you mentioned this last week, you know, which is really great that you did. What does mantra mean, right? Because sometimes I'll call this whole set of practices like secret mantra, right? And mantra doesn't just mean like the syllables. Like when you take it apart, one of the interpretations is like mind protection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? To protect the mind. And so when the Dalai Lama talks about, you know, when you start entering a practice, what's your commitments in the practice, right? Sometimes when you do a ritual like this, they'll say, okay, here's the commitments. But the Dalai Lama says, when you boil it all down, really, there's only like really one big commitment, right? And the one big commitment is to overcome mundane conceptions, right? And mundane comparisons, and to replace them with extraordinary, or you might say divine, conceptions and appearances. Like that's the one thing, you know? And I thought that was really striking when he said that, because sometimes when you get involved in these kinds of practices, you start doing rituals, you could think, well, there's all kinds of rituals to do that I have responsibility to do.
Yeah, that's a common, not fault, but a common description. You know, I've read in books that they said, oh, then I went to go see the Tibetan Buddhists and they did all these rituals. So then I went to go see this one and they did this, you know, they performed healing and, you know, but it gets ascribed to the Tibetan Buddhists for sure, is the high amount of ritual.
Yes. But what's cool is he boils it down and says, like, well, you really boil it down, like when you enter into the tantras, this is the main thing you're doing, right? Overcoming mundane conceptions and mundane appearances. And that has a lot to do with what you were talking about. This idea of thinking of yourself as kind of like a mundane thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of myself as Eric, or you're thinking of yourself as Daniel or whatever it is, right? You know, then you have that's the mundane version of ourselves or something. And you don't want to be like overly enmeshed or overly absorbed in those things. And basically in the tantras, then what they're saying is that that's like the main obstacle. That's like the main problem. If you wanted to boil it down, that's the thing that will, like, if you want to look at what's going to fuck up your life, that'll probably fuck up your life the most, right? Going through and attaching to mundane ideas and mundane conceptions about things, that's going to screw you up the most, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the Yidam practice, they kind of give you this thing where you're supposed to go through. And I mean, it's a shamanic culture too, so it makes sense, right?
Totally.
You're doing meditation, right?
Totally.
Where you're like getting in and you're kind of reframing yourself, exploring what it means to go to the deepest parts of who you are, the clear light mind part of who you are, right? The formless part of who you are. And then having the form part of yourself manifest out as this Yidam thing, right? And then you kind of change your object of identification, if you do it serious, to this more enlightened version of yourself, right? Popping out. And then you replace the mundane thing with the extraordinary thing. Right. If the word divine doesn't work, I could see that too. Divine pride in appearances, divine conceptions, appearances. Some people might feel a little bit like, that word makes me uncomfortable. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe it's enlightened or maybe it's extraordinary. Right. So you replace the mundane with the extraordinary. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the move, right? And then in the process, what I agree with you totally, Daniel, what happens then is you kind of break some of the power of that mundane way of thinking about yourself, gets a little bit broken each time, a little bit or something, right?
The question,
gets stretched a little time.
Mm-hmm. The question, though, and maybe this is just psychological in nature, I'm not sure how many people view themselves simply as mundane. I feel like a healthy psyche, and I'm not talking about an unhealthy psyche, person that is definitely deep into like a depression or a delusion or something like this. I mean, arguably we all have our own delusions, but like a person with a healthy ego, what society would consider a healthy ego and a, you know, stable psyche, I feel like they fancy themselves quite unique, quite individual, quite special. Maybe not an outward sense, but inward, we think we're quite great individually. And when you get the opportunity to experience something else, that uniqueness is equally as great. So you might, do you know what I'm saying?
It's a kind of an interesting question. I think you feel this way about American society and American folks in a different way than I think Americans think of themselves as pretty mediocre.
Okay.
And pretty bad. You know? So let me do the Lama Yeshe thing, because it's interesting. Let me see your reaction.
Okay.
Yeah, because it does talk about, he hits on what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So Lama Yeshe, we haven't talked about him as much. He's another one of these sort of Tibetan Buddhist teachers.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote this great book called Introduction to Tantra. So if you need like a kind of a book that you might want to say, oh, this is interesting, what could I read more about this? It's a good one.
This one.
Oh, that's a different one. But like, yeah, that's not his. That's the other guy's. I forget the name of that. That's one of the.
Tashi.
That's the, yeah.
Searing.
Yeah, Tashi Searing. Yeah. No, he's like, so Lama Yeshe wrote this book called Introduction to Tantra.
Oh, it's a blue cover with the.
Yeah, I
have that one.
They're both good books, right? Yeah. I like that. I like the one that you held it too, because it's part of a whole series. I used that when I was first really trying to learn this stuff very seriously. I thought he does a great job of taking these things apart, right?
Yeah.
Boy, I'm forgetting the degree, what they call it, but he, I think, has one of those 18-year degrees that people in Tibet can get where they study all the philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
Shit, I can't remember the name of it, but it'll hit me. It'll hit one or the other of us at some point, right?
Yes.
Ah, shit. Sometimes you forget. Like, I forgot the other day, like, the Om Mani Padme Hung, you know, I forgot, like, it's the jewel flower thing. And I was like, what do those words mean again? Sometimes you forget in the heat of the moment when we're doing this podcast. And I felt a little embarrassed afterwards. I couldn't come up with it in the moment. Oh, you're looking it up. Anyways, I'll do the Lama Yeshe thing, you know, so like he talks about this and, you know, he was a guy who came from Tibet and started working with Western people. And he basically says, you know, if you look at it, when you look at like what he calls the so-called realistic mind, the mind that people have, he says, when you poke underneath it and people's realistic minds, their mundane conceptions and appearances of themselves, they think of themselves as pretty bad. And in general, his observation was that most people have pretty low self-esteem.
Mm.
And this low self-esteem plagues people. And he says this is kind of like a ubiquitous feature, regardless of, you know, and he goes on to say, regardless of your religious or philosophical beliefs, people tend to think this way. When you poke underneath, they feel like really kind of crappy about themselves. And their opinions of themselves are really pretty low. And this is why people have so many like psychological problems from his perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because their opinions of themselves, when you really poke in them, they might have inflated versions of themselves that are compensatory or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But when you poke underneath, people probably feel pretty crappy about themselves. And he says, you know, this is the strong, deluded, self-defeating view. And these kind of self-pitying concepts, he says. He uses this kind of language, right?
Mm,
self-pitying concepts, low self-esteem, low SO, deluded self-visions of who you are, right? And that underneath, this is how people feel. They feel themselves to be pretty bad, pretty mediocre, and they hold a pretty low opinion of themselves. And he basically says, like, you know, that, and I guess he's talking about Western people. Mm. And I suppose in a certain sense, that vibes with how I see Western people. I don't see them as looking at themselves as being all unique and wonderful. I tend to see them as thinking themselves as pretty lame. you know, and with all kinds of like problems of self-esteem and depression and anxieties and, you know, a whole slew of other kinds of things like this. We might have a different view, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think generally I would probably agree with what you're saying, you know?
Yeah. And like, and so, and then like very limited ideas of what they think is possible, you know?
Sounds pretty like, bad.
I mean, he calls it. I'm like, yeah, that seems true. Seems true.
I so anyways,
he hits it really hard. Like he doesn't go, I mean, I was doing some research on this for somebody. And he hits it pretty hard. Like he doesn't softball it. You know, he talks about it. He pops, right? And he says, okay, here's the issue. You know, I'm gonna call it for you. There's this very limited perspective on who you are, what's possible, and probably real problems of a sense of like low sense of yourself, right? That makes you feel very limited, anxious, depressed, defeated, afraid. He just calls it that way, you know? And so then he says, well, this inner thing is what has to be transformed. On the one hand, he says, everyone has that deep Buddha nature, the formless, clear light, bliss part of yourself, you know, that you can kind of get to a meditation in the samadhi states, right? Where everything kind of falls away and you just feel yourself as this kind of blissful, clean light feeling or something, you know? I think a lot of people who meditate hit that thing at some point or another, right? Maybe you don't have a word for it, right? But you hit it. So, you know, he says everyone has that, that Buddha nature thing. So that's kind of a basis. But then also when you, he says like the fascinating point he tries to say is when you emanate out in some more extraordinary form, like a Tara or a Manjushri, or if you want to get into the highest Yoga Tantras, a Yamantaka or a Chakrasambhara, Vajrayogini, these kinds of figures, right? When you're doing that, you're doing this exercise of transforming this sense of yourself, right? And he says this amazing thing, Daniel. I'll bounce it off of you, and then I'm curious what you think about it. Because he says when you're emanating as a deity or, you know, a Buddhist enlightened figure, he says
and open up a little bit emanating as a deity. Make that a little bit more clear for people, Eric, because I mean,
like, to be honest, if you get a high yoga tantra, then you do a ritual and it's partially an invocation. So it's ritual magic and shamanic too, right?
Sure.
When you go through, you take yourself like apart, you go to the root of who you are. And then instead of coming back as Eric or Daniel, whoever you are, you imagine yourself coming back as this divine figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's a moment in the thing where you invoke. And so it's sort of like you imagine like any kind of ritual like this, right? You know, you, like you were talking about the shaman who tries to connect to the energy of bear or wolf.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Whoever it is, jaguar, or, you know, you're feeling that energy and you're invoking it into you. So that you imagine yourself remanifesting or emanating out as this divine form, as opposed to the mundane person of Eric or whoever you happen to be, right? That's the emanation idea.
So quick, so we didn't plan on this, but we'll do it. So the at least from my shamanic practice, which is, you know, 12 years running, those when you first engage with those animals, they come to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, unless you're in a lineage or something that where it's like we're eagle people. We work with eagle, like that's what we work with. For the most part, though, from what I've seen in terms of like Western contemporary shamanic practice, which is what I have to be in because I'm a Western contemporary shamanic practitioner, from all the students that I've seen all the years and all the stories that I've heard, they come to you. Those spirits come to you. They sort of arise out of where they are, you know, arise from, and then they make themselves known and visible, and then them and you come together. And once you have a relationship, then you can kind of call upon those, you know, those spirits, if you will, you know. And from my experience with the Tibetan, you know, empowerments, maybe I could say that they're calling to you. Like if somebody is listening to this and they go, yeah, maybe this sounds interesting. You know, maybe I want to check out one of these empowerments as they come. I guess maybe that's that emanation, that deity, that practice, calling to that person and pulling them in. And it's our illusion of free will that we go and choose it. You know what I'm saying? But Maybe I answered my own question.
Now, for me, like all I can say from my own personal experience, so the first time this popped up as a thing where it was really an opportunity to do it, it was one of these more highest yoga tantra things. And it specifically had to do with relationship and love. And I was like, well, if I'm ever going to do one of these things, this is obviously the part that I'm working on karmically. So this is the
Sure.
one for me, right?
Yeah.
And I think they would say that karmically speaking, that's how it works. You know, one of them will pop up as an opportunity,
Got
and
it.
it's the practice will find the person and vice versa, right? And that's then maybe where you'll take the step to do it. The weird thing about it was this particular practice is also supposed to be what they call the power of magnetizing, pulling things towards you that you will need in your life for spiritual progress, right? That's one of its special powers too, right?
Okay.
Magnetizing. So it was the first one I did, and then it had this magnetizing thing. And then what happened was at that particular thing, which I thought was a great experience. You know, I haven't really had a relationship with that teacher. He's from Bhutan, and you know, he happened to be traveling through, and there were people who had put together this event, you know. But he wasn't someone that I had a long-term relationship with, but I thought the experience was pretty powerful. But what happened was at that same event, they said, oh, there's something else you can go to where you can meet this other guy, this French Canadian guy who's going to do this other thing. And I was like, oh, that one I'm really into, what he was teaching. And he seemed interesting. And that was Lama Glenn,
Right.
right? He's been one of my dearest teachers and spiritual friends. So I think that's how it works. You know, I think that's how they'll talk about it. You know, the karmic wheels will turn and the fortunes will shine, and you'll get the connections where the connections kind of appear, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, the events will overlap. But okay, so on the Lama Yeshe thing, so here's what he says. It's because we're talking a little bit, you know, pre-mic, off mic, right? Pre-going on mic about these kinds of questions. So he says this thing. He makes this fascinating point, and he says it like super strongly. He says, emanating as an extraordinary form, as an enlightened form or whatever, has nothing to do with a particular culture or belief. It's nothing to do with that. He goes on to say, you are already self-emanating. You're already self-emanating an Eric or, you know, a Daniel or whoever you are. You're self-emanating that. You have some conception in your mind of what that is, and you're already emanating. And you're emanating probably some version of yourself that's way too narrow, way too limited, way too truncated, missing impossibilities, way too anxious, depressed, afraid, and so on. You're emanating that. You're already doing it. So don't think you're not emanating. You already are, is his point, right? And it's interesting then because he says the point is you're already doing emanating, and he also talks about the culture, and he says you're probably already emanating something of your culture. So when you self-emanate, he calls it like your self-pity image. But he's talking about just a more narrow, limited conception of who you are. You not think of yourself as being involved with a particular culture. You just do it. And then he says, stop doing this ignorant habit, exclamation point. Stop doing it. And then, you know, when you stop doing that, then you can start overcoming the mundane and ordinary ways of seeing things. I think it's strong, and I think it's awesome the way he says it. But so let me hear your reaction. What do you think?
This it's interesting because it reminds me of one of those quotes from like Alice in Wonderland. I think the Queen told Alice at one point, "Sometimes I've believed as many as six impossible things before breakfast." You know, and that like our the possibilities of what we can even imagine get limited as we sink further and further down into whatever kind of hole that we're into, or limited belief. You know, they tell you limited beliefs or false beliefs, you know, and that like when you can take on the perspective or the, you know, I've even heard, I forgot, I don't know if it was a Dalai Lama or somebody else, when they said that you, when you imagine yourself, when you visualize yourself, when you emanate as one of these beings or animals or whatever, that you're changing your nervous system in a way because you're seeing yourself with more than one pair of arms, or with a tail, or with another eye, or with a much larger heart. You know what I'm saying? That like you're changing the way that you relate kind of to yourself, and that opens up for possibility. And even if someone doesn't even necessarily believe in these kind of emanations, I think it's a worthwhile practice just to change the way that you see yourself, the way that you interact with yourself, and to open up the possibilities that things are beyond the way that you perceive them to be.
Yeah, I had this, a former student who sent me something about, like, she was interested in neuroscience, right? Went on to get firmer, like, education things around this, right? And she sent me meditation research where they just say, like, well, you're changing your brain structure for sure when you do this, right?
Yeah.
You want to get to those kinds of things. That was part of what you're saying. I know that it wasn't the total.
Yeah.
It's part of it, you know? So you don't even have to really believe in anything in particular about that. You just know that you're doing this. And I think one of the things she said originally was like, she said to me like a little text that said like, it's funny because I talked with her today a little bit via text. She said like, you're thickening your white matter, you know? And you're like, okay, you know, that's part of the thing too, right? You will change the neurostructure by doing this, right?
Totally.
That's like kind of, sometimes I'm going to think it's like the two-way street of this. Sometimes we work the body to change the mind, but you can work the mind to change the body. You can go either way, right? Mm-hmm. This is more of a way of sort of working the mind to work the body. I think sometimes in our Chinese, traditional Chinese medicine, we think working the body to work the mind is a thing, right?
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, this is a little bit different. This is more the idea, oh, I can't get this thing to do what I want it to do here. Hold on. Ah, crap. All right, there it is. That what you really want to do is you want to work the mind to change the body too, right? Which sometimes we don't do. Yeah. So, are you in with what you say? What do you think about the cultural thing? You're basically emanating a manifestation of your culture too.
Yes, unless
we were talking about that off mic earlier. I don't know if you want to do that or not, but that's what's happening. You're manifesting some cultural version of you, right?
Some cultural version. What do you mean?
Well, he says it like you think you're not emanating from a culture, but you are. You're emanating an American person.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The definition of American person, you're like whatever the limitations of that are. You're emanating that, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. So the onus is on the individual to overcome.
Those
limitations, which is what we, you know, we're discussing on the regular basis.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, and I know for you and I, but like on this podcast and, you know, some moments, sometimes you and I are having a conversation. We know we're being recorded. And then other times, like in the moment now, I'm speaking to whoever is listening or watching. Like that is literally the fucking point, you know? And I speak bluntly on purpose. It is to overcome our own limitations, mine included, you know, my own limitations on me totally 100% most of the time believing that I am a separate being than Eric, a completely different person. When we talk about it, I'm like, oh yeah, no, of course, we're in the realm of teachings right now. We're in the realm of, you know, our congregation of our, you know, we're in the pulpit, you know, the gospel pulpit, if you will. And so I'm reminded of all the things that I try and embody. And yet once we leave here, you know, when I'm just walking down the street, somebody bumps into me, you know, I'm like, hey man, what the hell? Watch where you're going. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's those moments. So as we talk about this and you talk about emanation, we are embodying of something that we probably are not even fully aware of. So instead of just going through the world and being people that we're just being, maybe we can enter that consciously, enter into that with something that extends beyond just an American, but extends beyond just a man or a woman or a father or a mother or a partner or a European or whatever, you know, and carry around some of this, what they call divine pride, you know, and carry that off of the meditation cushion, carry that off of, you know, outside of your compassionate engagement with your loved ones and extend that in all directions, you know, and that is definitely part of what Eric, you and I are doing very mindfully as we are talking about this.
Yeah. If divine doesn't work, you can say enlightened.
Sure.
That works for you better, right?
How about improved?
Well, why not go for it? Go enlightened. You know, you want to meditate like some mediocre deity, like, you know, 50% better, Tara.
You know? There you go. That's not bad.
10% happier, Tara.
10% happier. Yeah, that's it. Right at the margins, you know?
Yeah, like just like I barely squeaked fast over. No, I think they wanted to do something extraordinary, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There's a, okay. So as far as like what we're talking about with, you know, the mind being difficult and painful stuff, right?
Yeah.
As we talk kind of honest, like I got kind of an ass kicking over the last year by anyone's definition. I would have to say that would count. And as I thought about like, you know, we started doing these episodes, or this one in particular, where we started talking about like, what do you do when you're getting your ass kicked, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the mind is going to be going through a lot of like turmoil around that. So, yeah, I started thinking of like over the years, what have I done? You know, that's where I went with this in a way, Daniel.
Yeah.
You know, I started thinking, okay, what have I done over the years? Because I've learned different things over the years. Like when I started doing Zen, it was counting your breath and doing these special breathing techniques that built up a lot of like internal, what they call internal yang, right? Internal will, internal drive. That was the technique. And that's probably what I was doing if I was getting my ass kicked. I was doing that. And did that help me? Yeah, it did. Right.
Sure.
At other times we could talk about like doing a mantra, right?
Mm.
At times, you know, because I learned some Kabbalah, you can meditate on letters, right? That have certain qualities of energy. And maybe we'll do that at some point too, right?
Yeah. Not as
well, but, you know, those are all things I look back and I thought, yeah, at different times I did different things. From my teacher, Master Shengli Wang, he said you should connect to the true energy of the universe and that's how you'll overcome things. You know, so I've done different things at different times, right? But when we got to this one that I knew we were going to talk about today, I thought this one was kind of important, but not my mind a lot, because it's one of the most powerful ones, actually, I found for myself, right? You might have different experiences. But for me, I realized that this is really strong. If I really talk about getting over internally inflicted suffering, right? This one ended up being like particularly powerful, right? From my perspective, that was one of the ones that was the most powerful for like eliminating the suffering, like of the moment, right? Mm. The mantras do that too in a way, but this one's very strong for this, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you kind of go through, when you, like you say, okay, I'm going to, and this is the part that kind of bothers me. And I want to talk through it because I think it's part of this whole series of episodes, right?
Sure.
Definitely interested in your perspective. But I realized like, okay, if I'm getting like, I'm going through a hard time and I'm going through a hard time in my way, I realized like, okay, this seems to be the practice that's the most instantly curative, right? I do the thing where, you know, we each have our own ones that we love. I have one of these particular items that I love, right? That's the one that I most identify with. And I manifested that, and that's the most powerful thing, right? And kind of shockingly so, it like really takes me out of my own parts of my mind that might be the things that would be causing me difficulties, you know, in the moment. I can do it right then. Now, of course, I practice it when I'm doing my meditation too, like you were talking about last time, right? And this time too, you practice it, but in the moment I can do it, right? When it's very strong. And so that struck me as kind of like an interesting point of what that means for that to be so strong even in of itself, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But then it got to like parts that are really kind of deep questions that I thought I would throw out to you and the audience for people to think about, right? Where I started thinking, okay, what's the total meaning behind that, right? And I'm really wondering about this, Daniel, because it goes along with all of these obstacle things for me too. To me, and we were talking about this off mic, to me, when I look at these things, they don't have to necessarily be obstacles. They right. could be points of benefit.
Sure.
But they're listed as obstacles because mostly they're going to get fucked up by people. Most people are going to screw them up. Right? You start to realize that. And it's been like kind of one of the running themes of this whole project, even going back over all the years. One of my ambitions in this project was to go and to say, okay, it's a samsaric world, but we can go and find our non-samsaric things within the samsaric world. And I wanted the podcast to be a lot about that, right?
Yeah.
And I still don't doubt that. But what's been interesting, if I really look at it honestly, and it's a point that I've made before and we've talked about already, but to me, if I look at it honestly, I don't think it's that, you can't blame it on the universe. I think the universe actually gives lots of opportunities for people to do extraordinary things. I honestly believe that that's true. you know? Mm. And in a certain sense, I think the universe is almost like crying out for us to do this, or the enlightened forces of the universe are reaching out to try to, you know, catch us and say, hey, do this extraordinary thing. You don't have to do this mundane conception appearance thing. You don't have to do it. I'll help pull you out. And the universe will do that. But if I'm honest about it, and this bothers me a lot because it goes to the theme of this whole podcast for me in a certain sense, right? And I, you know, I want to be authentic in what I'm saying, and, you know, we both do. If I'm honest about it, my feeling is more like, yeah, the universe does that, but in a lot of ways, people are the problem. People are very samsaric, and the universe will throw them the ball, and the person will miss the ball and let it just bounce off their face. And that's my honest feeling, you know, and watching it, you know, and looking at this over decades, I've been like, no, there's lots of opportunities. You know, there's always these doors opening to do these things. But when push comes to shove, I think the Lama Yeshe thing will happen. I think people will do the mundane thing, right? They'll do the mundane conception, the mundane appearance, probably because of their own limiting views of who they are, what's possible. You know, their self-pitying minds, their deluded self, defeating beliefs, their so-called realistic minds, all these phrases he uses. I think that's kind of the truth of how it is. And I wish the fuck it wasn't like that. Mm. Oh, fellow G&Ters, I wish I could say something different. I want to so badly. And I'm still going to try. I'm not giving up, fellow G&Ters. But if I'm honest about it, that's what I actually think. You know, if I'm really, really honest. And it raises a kind of a weird question. I mean, something you want to say about that? I don't know. I don't want to keep blabbing about that, but you're going to have your own reaction to it too. We may not feel the same.
Yeah. Well, I just realized both of us are wearing maroon. So I like this, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's something. Yeah. That's a thing. I also think it is.
The wine, right? The sacred, blissful wine. Yeah.
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 I think it's also influence, man. You know, that not everybody has the influence on them to take that step, to even know what that step would be, to recognize that that step is there. So like missing an opportunity, you can only miss it if you realized it was there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And for many people, fortunately, that opportunity is there. It really is. And I agree with you. But I think there is also a large cross section, and that probably tends to be lower socioeconomic type folks that may not have as much influence to open them up to that. You know, like the influence may actually be moving them away from that thing, away from those kinds of personal development types of opportunities.
That's obstacle number 5 too.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Well, that's why I mentioned it. Yeah, so
that's part of this one too.
Yeah, and I do, but I legitimately feel, you know, because then, and I just think of, you know, some of the places that I've lived in, like watching, you know, children of various races, you know, just Cheetos and Pepsi and Kool-Aid for snacks. Mm-hmm. A life like that, when that is your nourishment at a young age, that is going to remain a staple in your diet unless you are really hit with something deep, you know, to force you to change. And I'm not picking on those particular snacks, but they are not good food for your brain or your body. You know what I'm saying? And so those kinds of influences over people over long periods of time really move you away from, I think, these possibilities, you know, and I like to call them possibilities because it's anything is there if you decide to go down, you know, that road.
I don't want to kill your flow in it, but the only thing about that is I don't know people who have a lot of money do a whole heck of a lot better on this.
I'm not saying it's clear cut. I'm just saying, I think those people who have more means are exposed to more things just by virtue of their zip code. You know?
But I mean, I don't know if they do that much better. I think they do by this standard, by what Lama Yesh is saying, I think they do just as crappy.
Sure. I'm just saying, there's one of them has a little bit more.
We agree that there's more opportunities for people who have more, money at their exposure.
Yes. Yes.
Right. That's not saying that that's not true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Part is more like, I can't say people who have a lot more resources are doing a heck of a lot better. I don't think they really are by this criteria. Yeah.
Yeah. By this criteria. So, I mean, I guess at the end of it, it's like, if you're listening and you're hearing, and not that, you know, we're any kind of great anything, feel pretty lucky, you know, feel pretty lucky, because these kinds of conversations don't fit into the normal discourse of, you know, blame Republican, blame Democrat, you know, Trump bad, Biden bad, you know, whatever, this president bad, this, you know, look what this one did, you know, whatever. That fits. We could do a podcast on this and we'd be very, you know, I definitely would have some hot takes. Eric would have some hot takes. You know, we would have, 700,000 listeners as opposed to just 100,000. And that would be, you know, that would be something different.
600,000 more.
Yeah, right. It's a big jump. But that kind of like discourse is already available. So people don't need to turn to us for those kinds of conversations to stimulate their mind in that way. But this is the kind of conversation that stimulates us, that brings us, you know, deep passion in exploring further and then having a discourse on, you know?
Well, okay, listen, if you get all, you know, we like to go personal. So from my point personally, definitely I wouldn't be saying, you know, if someone has economic limitations or, you know, like, obviously we have a lot of compassion for all of that. So it's no way like looking at that, but that's why I think it's important to say that. I don't think that, like, again, by this criteria, anyone's doing that much better. But the thing is, I really care about this thing of people getting enlightened. I really, really care about this a lot. If you ask me, like, what's one of the most core things I care about, it's that for myself and others, right? I mean, that's the thing that I care about. If I incarnated here for a reason, it was to do that, right? Like, that's the only reason for me to be here. Otherwise, I got no particular other reason to be here, you know, personally. And so if I look at, and then like, I don't want it to be this way, but if I look at it honestly, I do have to, like, this is the doctory part of me. This is a diagnostician, you know what I mean? As opposed to someone walking around trying to like give a bunch of shit to people. That's not my intention at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is diagnostic, just going, hey, it looks like this is what's happening, you know? If you had to ask for an honest diagnosis, I would say this is what the diagnosis is. I suppose in the same way that like Lama Yeshe is saying the same thing with his diagnosis. He's making a diagnosis. And I'm like, yeah, I think there's like truth in your diagnosis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my guess, I think what I've been thinking about in our doing these podcasts, especially over the last year or so, has been like, I don't think it's that the opportunities don't come from the universe. I think they do, right? I think the universe is trying, right, hard to help us.
Mm-hmm.
Find things. I don't think you can blame it on the universe. You had to, like, you know, point the fingers back at us.
Right.
The fault is not in the stars.
Oh, that's so American of you, Eric. That's so American of you to own it.
To own it? I don't know if it's American or not, but it should be owned.
There you go. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it should be owned, right? I think we have to like look at it, like say that it's like that. And that's not, again, it's not like any more judgmental than if you're just making a diagnosis as a clinician. This is a clinical thing. It's not a, hey, let me give people a hard time or whatever. That's not the point at all. It's just, if I look at it honestly, I wish it wasn't fucking like this, but I think it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think
it's because like people are so like, it's the people are so enmeshed in the samsaric ways of thinking that it's just, it is what it is. And I don't like it. I wish it wasn't the case, but it's painful for me to have to like sit here and say, yeah, that probably is in many ways the case. And it makes it a lot harder for me to complete the mission project of this project for me, which is something like, yes, you can build a life within the samsara, within the difficulties of the mundane world. You can build an extraordinary world for yourself. It's not that easy if what's really happening is everything's being limited by samsaric ways of thinking all over the place. It's hard.
So let's maybe move our conversation in a slightly forward motion here, Eric.
So I got maybe something else I want to say about, but give me your thing, and then if I want to, I'll double back. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. So somebody they agree, for sake of argument, they agree with what you know, the premise of this, right? That there are opportunities in people's lives that they don't take, they choose not to take, they're unaware of, whatever the case is. But let's just say we can't talk to those people. We're going to continue to do this, and hopefully they hear it from us or somebody else whenever their time that the light bulb goes on. That's when the lights, that's the time that it's supposed to happen for them. Okay, fine. But now we're talking to the people who the light bulb is on, and they're walking down a path with their little torch, their little light bulb, right? And they're wanting to go somewhere. What, you know, and they're saying, okay, you know, Eric, like, I understand, I hear what you're saying about society. I feel this pressure to be something that I'm not, to do things that I don't want to do. I understand the necessity to eat food and live and whatever, but like outside of those basic requirements, what else can I do? What should I do? What are the next steps, right? We've talked about, you know, various techniques of like using mantra, using visualizations, yidam, or, you know, I call them yantra, of using kind of like, you know, the aspects of mind, of control of your attention, moving of your attention to change your perspective and give you a new sense of being, a different sense of being. Like what other steps or what other kind of movements?
Well, I'll make you answer that first. You frame that whole question. You answer it.
Okay.
I'll give an answer but you framed it. So you got to answer that one first. I'll give you my opinion afterwards, but like you set up a whole scenario. So
yeah. So where does somebody go once they have desire to begin? And I don't have a really great answer. I think it depends on your personality, right? First, if you are a very structured individual, then I would say creating a structure in your life where you can create time and space to practice these things probably seems like a logical step. I mean, I would say that for anybody, but, you know, depending on where people are, I will sometimes let them experiment with different times a day, different lengths of time meditating or, you know, whatever, and let them find the place that they settle at naturally. I think personally it's best to have set times because it just, you build your life around it. If you leave it up to chance, then it might go to chance, but you know, some people don't want to be told what to do. So I understand there's difference in personality, but I would say first is finding a time or creating a time and a space to be able to practice this. And then the other part would be to pay attention. And if you pay attention via like journaling, if that helps you, you know, then you could do that. If you pay attention via like creative projects, you know, to see, I know so many of my like friends and patients have been doing like pottery, you know, over the last couple of years, they really like pottery. Yeah. But what's really beautiful is that like we talked about this sort of spinning technique in the mind. We talked about in the first episode, I think we called that the mischievous mind. And then we talked about it again when we did the mantra, that this kind of twirling, this whirling, but and people who get involved, you know, again, because it's the wheel when you're doing pottery is spinning. Mm-hmm. And so they get trapped into that meditation of seeing the wheel spinning. And so when I introduce some of these techniques to them, they're like, oh yeah, done. I got it. Like they totally feel it. And there's a physical sensation to it. You know what I'm saying? So they can relate to that very easily. So finding something that can help you be reflective, that can give your mind an opportunity to be present on one particular thing that is both naturally flowing from you, like in writing, like in artwork or something like this, and creative at the same time. And so, you know, you talked, Eric, a while back about like the three sort of pillars of like Zen monk practice, right? Having a meditative art, creative art, and a martial art. And yeah. And I've mentioned this to many people. And of course, we could take numerous different tracks on those three things. Your martial art could just be some exercise or walking or something like this, you know, but something to do for the physical body. The meditative art can be practiced in numerous different ways. Like today we're talking about yantra or about, you know, yidam. Last week we're talking about mantra. The week before we're talking about like controlling of the rays of your attention, something like this, or some Zen practice that we've talked about in years past, or like you just mentioned, meditating on syllables or connecting to the energy of the pure energy of the universe, however, and then the creative art, allowing yourself to be closer to a flow state. And maybe even if your art is, you know, decent enough and you've been doing it for a while, you could be in a flow state of just sort of you and your expression are simultaneous, like you happen together. So this is probably what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like can't disagree with any of that, right?
Mm, oh, good.
So I suppose the idea is, I mean, those are all great things to do, right?
Yes. So,
but I suppose the idea that's being raised here is like, where are the mundane conception and appearances?
Mm.
Where are those? So maybe the thing to figure out is to look at your life and say, okay, where is my life being limited by mundane conceptions and appearances?
Yeah.
Myself, or the way that I think of the circumstances around me, or the choices that I make that like emphasize those, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard question, but maybe that's the other one that has to be asked with it, right?
Yeah.
Where are the mundane conceptions and appearances, right?
That's a good point.
Yeah. So, because I mean, if you get to what the Dalai Lama is saying, he's saying that's the primary question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to overcome those or not, right? And I guess it's almost like two different levels of answer, which are both good, right?
Right.
On one hand, it's like, okay, let's get pragmatic, like, which I think is like what you're saying, right? Let's get pragmatic. What are pragmatic things to do, right? So I would say, okay, find whatever it is as a spiritual practice that you have on the love, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, go through and then find the aspects of that that speak to you and follow them, right? And keep following them. Keep digging. Like, don't stop. Keep going, right? Even if you have to keep moving, right? Yeah. You know, keep searching for the things that actually speak to you. And, you know, so, you know, that's part of like the practical answer of things, right? You might have mm-hmm. to go and try a Zen thing and be like, nah, that wasn't for me. You know, I'll go to some, you know, like a Buddhist-y thing. Well, the other thing, that wasn't for me. Maybe I'll do something else. You know, whatever it is you have to do, you have to keep exploring, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, the thing that's being brought up here is the mundane conception and appearance thing. Like, that's the thing that's being brought up.
Yeah.
Where you might have to ask yourself, like, and where is it in my life that I'm being limited by mundane conception and appearances? That might be the thing that's being brought up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the thing. I mean, we're talking about the yidam, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing that the yidam's trying to overcome, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if the theme of the episode is about the yidam, then the thing would be like, okay, so you can find the yidam that you like and, like, get an empowerment in that yidam, you know? But the thing that got, so the thing that, again, like, if I get to the part of it that's kind of bugging me, and again, it's like my wanting to be honest and doing this thing that we're doing. I really want to believe that it's possible to build a non-samsaric existence within the samsara that can be an enlightening thing. And like, we're all chipping away at it. But I have to, like, again, be kind of honest about this and say, yeah, it's more difficult because I think there's so much of the limiting conceptions and appearances that are going on for people. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It does limit the possibilities of what can get done. And I wish it wasn't like that. And I had one other thing about this that was kind of deep. I'll throw it out and then it's sitting at the end of the episode, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a tough one. So I'll throw it at you, Dan. You can tell me what I think and then people can hear it. And I don't know what else to say about it, but it is a difficult thing. I would say on some level, what I'm really contemplating, again, going super personal on it, is like I spent a lot of time in my life kind of building up this Eric person that I am, right? I came from kind of like an abusive background. I came up from a pretty tough background. I was like sick a lot. I didn't come from like a privileged place, you know? So, you know, it was a lot of scrapping, right? To kind of like get out of my teens into my 20s and so on. So I started doing the Zen. I started doing the psychology and I started working at like who I thought I was, right? An authentic version of myself. And I chipped away at that. And in the end, I felt like, okay, I know what I think about life. I know what I think about the world. I know what I believe is true. I know who this Eric person is, right? But if I'm honest with myself about it, and this is tough, if I'm honest with myself about it, has that solved the dukkha problem? To what extent has that solved the dukkha problem? And it solved parts of it, you know what I mean? But when I think about it in all honesty, it's a tough thing because I like this Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I made an Eric that I like. I emanated something that I like, a personal version of myself that I like. But has it really solved the dukkha problem? If I was like being totally Buddhistly honest, has it solved the dukkha problem? And a part of me would have to say no.
Dukkha meaning suffering.
Suffering. And the reason why is because this Eric person that I became is a very true version of myself. And if I'm like if I'm honest about it, probably pretty open-hearted, loving, caring kind of a person, like a person that I could be proud of. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the result of some work. It wasn't like, you know, I was like that kind of person before. It was actual work to become a person that you feel good about yourself. But we all do that, right? We can all relate to that. I don't feel so good about myself the way Lama Yeshe is saying. I work on myself. I feel better about myself. Yeah. Right? But the person that I became, who I believe in, who I think is true, doesn't fit in this samsara very well, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fit necessarily that well with the samsara quality of, you know, what life is like, what the culture is like, these kinds of things. It doesn't fit very well. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it hasn't actually fully solved the problem in a way. And when I had to like look at myself kind of tough, and I don't even know where this goes and some of the things we've been talking about, because it's such a deep question. But what I kind of am starting to realize is like, no, you know, probably this Eric person has to go too. Right. And probably in part, I have to become the Yidam even more so. Right. And that's probably like the point now on some level that even this person that I became that I like, you know, because I didn't always like myself. And now I do. Even that person probably has to go to really get to the root of this, you know, and that's a deep thought. It's a little bit scary on some level, right? To have to think about that, but it's been on my mind. So I thought I would just throw it out for discussion, right? Mm. And it's so deep, I don't even know where we'll go with it totally. But it's something I have thought about related to the Yidam. Because what I realized was that, you know, when you become the Yidam, then the Eric problems disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a weird and deep thought. But since we're talking about what you can do to overcome the suffering of the mind, which is what we've been talking about, I have to realize like, yeah, that is true on some level. And I think that's what Lama Yeshe is talking about. I think that's what the Dalai Lama is talking about. Now, that's a deep point, and it's not like something that everybody's going to vibe with. But it is like, it's a deep thing. And in all honesty, I think like, yeah, that's something I really have to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the more ultimate answer to a question, right? It's hard, right? Now, maybe on the more like everyday level, it might be more like, boy, like I'm this version of whoever I am. I don't like that version of who this is. I better like transition this forward and transform this forward. I think that is a noble enterprise to do. And maybe we all can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
I look at myself in the mirror now. I've had this experience too, right? Looking at myself saying, I don't like this Eric. Nah, I don't like this person, you know? And feeling like you have to transform and make yourself into a better version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe is something we all can relate to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding myself in a different point where I'm saying like, okay, well, I worked on this Eric for a long time. I like this Eric, but still I can't say that if I was being honest and I was trying to emulate what Buddha was doing, which was putting the challenge of like, how do you end suffering, right? That's the challenge he throws out to us. How do you end suffering in a real way? Becoming this authentic version of me feels a lot better. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I would recommend it to everybody, right? Be who you are, right? Become who you are. Look at yourself in the mirror, and if you feel like, yeah, I don't like that, then work on yourself and become a better version of who you are. Something that speaks more truly to who you are. You're going to feel better. I think that's 100% true.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if that's a piece of advice, that's a piece of advice that we can all start with wherever we're from. You know what I mean? If I look at myself, then I feel like, okay, I tried to do that. And I tried to be honest of what I thought about the world, what I thought about myself, what I thought about different parts of life. And I tried to manifest, I tried to emanate that in the Lama Yeshe sense. I'm going to emanate that. But has it solved the total problem? I have to be honest, like it hasn't, right? And that bothers me too.
Mm.
If I can come up with a better answer, GNTers, I will. Just being honest, you know? And so what I realized was like, yeah, part of the thing is like this tantric demand that you, in an ultimate sense, you have to do what Lama Yeshe is saying probably. Even that version of yourself that you like, you might have to like, okay, I'm going to let part of that go and I'll try to become Tara.
Mm.
Right, I'll try to become Manjushri. You know, it seems to be the way. It seems to be the way the cookie crumbles. You know what I mean? And it bugs me. I wish it wasn't totally like this, but I have to admit that in part, I have to say that that's true. You know, and I don't totally love it.
Mm.
I like Eric. Even though other people who think he's an asshole, I like him. I think he's pretty good.
That's right.
You know, I worked on this fucking dude.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time to become this person, right?
Your favorite,
I help a lot. I do help people and I do things that are good and all that. I mean, I like I could say my life has paid off in that way. But if I'm honest about it, there's still a problem. This Eric doesn't fit in this culture. He's a different kind of being, doesn't vibe that well. I've tried to go through and say, well, let me go through and build special connections, special things, build a special life that's much more outside of the cultural frame, but it's very difficult, right? And to the extent that that causes difficulties, I have to admit, like, oh yeah, maybe the thing is you have to become this yidam in the way Lama Yeshe is saying. Otherwise, this shit doesn't end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. But it might be how it is. So anyways, I threw it out there. It's the deepest thing I can say about the yidam thing from where I'm at, because I've worked with this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this yidam practice has been probably 17, 18 years.
Mm.
You know? If I get to it now, I'm like, yeah, you know, there's still this thing. This weird little Buddhist-y problem, right? Where even if you become a person that you like, you're clashing with the environment, it's still difficult, you know? So mm-hmm. I'm posing the question. I will give feedback on how I think it goes, fellow G&Ders. I wish I could give, you know, like, I mean, it's partially a positive take, you know, it's partially like build up a good version, a healthy version of your own self, a sense of self, and then also keep transforming it is probably the underlying message for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the ultimate transformation is what Lama Yeshe is talking about. But anyways, that's how I would think about the yidam. It's a deep thing, but I thought I would share it.
It is a deep thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's also a showstopper.
It is definitely a showstopper.
There's like nothing to say about that.
No, I mean, I definitely have thoughts, but I don't want to, you know, that's a completely different topic. Mm. One that needs its own air. So we'll leave it.
I mean, it's in a certain sense of saying like, you got to get enlightened.
Yes.
You got to get enlightened. Until you get enlightened, there's going to be problems, you know? And like, it's I wish it wasn't like that. I really do, you know? But well, if let's I'm leave honest it, with myself, that's the honest answer.
Let's leave it as a query for folks, and we'll see if we pick it back up next week a little bit.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a tough question. But yeah. I wanted to be honest in this episode because we were sure. talking about them, and I've been thinking about this question of what the yidam does. It's definitely an antidote for suffering. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But it also involves this weird thing of like recognizing like, oh, well, you know, it's a very strange act of transformation.
Yeah.
It's scary, but probably how it's probably true. Right?
Yeah.
Which basically means get enlightened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do that together, folks. That sounds like a good time. Let's all fucking get enlightened.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Sounds
yeah.
good to me.
All right. Well, thanks, Eric, Daniel. It's kind of a weird subject matter, but I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Well, Eric, thank you as always for being on the ride with me, my friend. And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in, whether you're on YouTube or whatever audio platform you enjoy. We definitely appreciate the love. Like, comment, subscribe, share our work. Hit us up, jinandtantra@gmail.com or on Instagram at the Jin and Tantra Podcast. Drop a like or slide into our DMs. You know, we appreciate all the McLovin. And to our international audience, what's up? We definitely hear from folks from time to time, so we appreciate the love from all over the globe. Same issues, man. Just, you know, different zip code. I don't know if they have zip codes in other countries. Country codes, maybe? Area codes? I don't know. Whatever. There's a song by Ludacris that, you know, I could bring up, but we won't right now. But if you know it, then you could sing it to yourself. But until we see you guys next time, this is Eric. I'm Daniel. That's Eric. You know how I say things backwards once in a while. It's a staple.
Well, Daniel, we're like all like a big mishmash interconnectivity.
That's true. I'm human for other humans.
I am you, and you as me, as we are me, and we are all together. I think that's
right.
We are the walrus, goo goo kachu. Yeah.
There we go.
There you go.
Yeah. But either way, for whoever I am and whoever this guy is, we'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.
You to get together. I want you to get together. Put your hands together one time. I want you to get together. I want you to get together.